Mickey Mantle, the batter, bases full of Yankees. Big moment of the World Series. Meyer in a lot of trouble. Gets the sign from Campanella. Here's his pitch. Mantle swings, and there's a long drive, and that ball's out of here. Grand slam. And the Mix got himself a big Yankee reception committee.
In the late 40s, the Mickey Mantle legend begins to unfold on the sandlots of Commerce, Oklahoma. Mickey Mantle, baseball's Triple Crown winner, 1956. Three times the American League's most valuable player. Holder of 9 World Series records, including 18 home runs. Today, Mantle is a successful business executive in Dallas, Texas. Former Green Bay great Paul Hawning met with Mickey during a morale-boosting visit to a children's hospital, and then once again at Hawning's Manhattan apartment, where they explored the legend of a man who was to become one of baseball's all-time immortals.
Mickey, you're probably on the covers of more magazines than anybody in the history of the New York Yankees, and I'd say that stands as itself quite an honor, but the one thing that distinguishes Mickey Mantle from all the rest of you, great power from both sides of the plate, and it started early. Your dad, I understand, really wanted you to learn how to hit from both sides of the plate.
Well, yeah, baseball was his whole life, and he named me, actually, before I was born, after a baseball player named Mickey Cochran. His name was Gordon, but my dad didn't know that, I'm glad of. And anyway, he knew that someday in the future, from the time that I was born, that you're going to have to, if you couldn't hit both ways, you're going to have to be platooned. And so he taught me, his father was a left-handed pitcher, and he was right-handed, so he would pitch to me and let me hit left-handed, and then when my grandfather came home from work, well, he would pitch to me left-handed, and I'd bat right-handed. So they knew that someday you're going to have to be a switch hitter, or almost a switch hitter, unless you're just one of the fortunate ones that could hit both types of pitching from one side of the plate. And it was really lucky for me, because when I joined the Yankees is when Casey Stengel started platooning everybody.
Well, I've got some of your 536 home runs here, Mick. Why don't you get comfortable over here? We'll take a look and see if we can pick up some of this.
The hitter will be Mickey Mantle. We'll be up there right-handed in a tough situation. They're around to the left on Mantle. Here's the pitch, and he gets all of it. He hits a long drive deep, deep left field. And that ball is gone. Mantle bangs one when the Yankees really need it.
You see that facade up there in right field in Yankee Stadium? I hit two balls that almost went over that, and I think they liked about maybe 6 inches apiece, and those were two of the hardest hit balls I ever hit.
Mantle up there left-handed against the right-hander. They pull around to the left on Mantle, and here's the pitch. It's a breaking ball, and he hits a deep shot to right center field. The ball is going, it's gone. Another home run by Mickey Mantle, which ties up the ball game. Mantle, the batter. The pitch is over, and he gets a shot at it and bangs it hard to deep left center field. This ball may be out of here. It is gone. A home run by Mantle. And the Yankees jump into the lead.
This here picture here was in an All-Star game. This is one of the biggest thrills I ever had. This game went about 15 innings, and Stan Musial ended up winning the game. He and Yogi was pitching. This is Nellie Fox here, and this guy coming in right now was one of my idols, Ted Williams, and I hit the ball with him on base. I think Ted Williams is probably the greatest hitter I ever saw.
The batter, Mickey Mantle, up there left-handed, and he gets a fastball and hits a long, long drive, deep right field. It's gone. It's out of the ballpark. Another homer for Mantle. Mickey Mantle, the batter. A windup and the pitch, and Mantle bangs it. A long, high fly ball hit very high and very deep into right field. It's out of here. A home run by Mickey Mantle. In game two in the 60 series, Mantle swings and drives one to deep center field at Ford Field, the biggest part of the ballpark, and it's gone.
That was in Pittsburgh there. That was, I think that was the only time that I felt like the best team got beat in the World Series. Pittsburgh beat us that year. That was the year that Kubek got hit in the throat with that bad hop, and we scored something like 53 runs, and they scored 13, I think, in that World Series game. I mean, in that one series, and they beat us. That's one of the worst feelings I ever had in my life after that series there.
Mantle's had a big year against the Indians. Here's the left-hander's pitch. Here's a shot by Mantle in the deep left center. That ball jumps out of here. A home run by Mickey Mantle. And so the World Series moves along. Here's a long, long drive. Mantle back, makes the catch on the run in front of the warning track.
There's one of the best pitchers. He knew that one was gone, I think, just as soon as he threw that.
That was Koufax.
He didn't make very many mistakes, and when he did, you had to take advantage of him. I think Koufax is probably the best left-handed pitcher I ever hit against.
Big moment in this World Series game. Here's a drive by Mickey way, way back. The ball is carrying well, and it is gone. A home run by Mickey Mantle. Big moment of this ball game. Mantle will be the hitter, and they play him back deep. Here's the pitch, and Mantle's laying it down. The butt is perfect. Mantle will get a base hit. There's no play on him.
All your great outfielders, years past, you look, they all have to possess that great speed.
Yeah, I did. I could run pretty good. I wasn't really known as a great outfielder, though.
Well, Mickey, in 1959, you joined a club that at that time was pretty exclusive. $100,000 a year club. That's Musial, Mays, DiMaggio, and Ted Williams were the only ones who actually had a salary of $100,000 in those days. And we're going to take a look at the $100,000 club in just a moment. Mickey, in 1960, you reached a level of excellence very few ball players had attained before then, the $100,000 a year club. I guess it's quite a distance from 1949, receiving $100,000 a year as a salary from the New York Yankees. It's a far cry from 1949.
That sure is. I think that when I signed with the Yankees in 49, they gave me $1,500 for the whole year. $500 of it was considered a bonus, and the other $1,000 was for finishing out that summer. About that time was when they started giving these big bonuses to the ball players, and the way that I got into the picture was Tom Greenway, the Yankee scout, lived in Springfield, Missouri, and he was on his way to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma to sign a shortstop. He was talking about giving him $35,000, and he stopped in Baxter Springs. I was playing the Baxter Springs Whiz kids, and he stopped there to watch this ball game, and I happened to hit three home runs that day. I hit two right-handed and one left-handed, and all three of them went in the river, which was quite a ways out in center field there. And he stopped and talked to me. Of course, he couldn't sign me right at that time because I was still in high school. So he told me that asked me if I would like to play at the Yankees. And of course, you know, Joe DiMaggio was always my idol. And I said, sure, I'd like to play at the Yankees. And he said, well, don't do anything. He said, whenever I come back through here and you graduate out of high school, why, maybe we can talk to you, and he gave me $1,500.
Here's a few guys that I think you'll realize not only achieved stardom, but big salaries.
Well, it was a big thrill to make $100,000. Babe, I guess he didn't ever get to $100,000, but he made $80,000, and I think they only taxed him like $5,000. That bat he's swinging, Paul, is 48 ounces. That is unbelievable. He must have really been strong. I think when I finally quit, when I retired, I was using a 30-ounce bat to give you an illustration of how big that bat was.
And DiMaggio, of course, one of the greats.
I think that probably there's the greatest all-around baseball player that ever lived. He could do everything, like sliding in there. Ted Williams is probably the greatest hitter I ever saw, I think, but he wasn't the all-around baseball player that Musial and DiMaggio was. And that's Willie Mays, of course. He's fielding is one of the greatest fielders that ever played the game. This is that great catch that he made off of Vic Wertz in the 54 World Series. That's whenever people really started noticing Willie.
And this is the Mick.
Yeah.
Great, great arms, Mickey.
I think that came from swinging that sledgehammer in the mines, Paul. We used to have milk cows. I had to milk 16 milk cows before I go to work in the mines.
What is
Looks
that?
Like I popped up on that one. One time I did that, though, I hit what I thought was a pop-up in the center field, and I took my bat and broke it on the ground, and the ball went into the center field bleachers and kind of made me feel stupid that day.
And this, of course, 1951, your first World Series, and you're carried off here, Mickey, the first of the series of injuries. You were, when they think of Mickey Mantle, you think people talk about your injuries. This was the first one in the World
that
Series.
That one right there, I think, was probably the one that started all the rest of them. I tore up my right knee. Not very many people know it, but that was in a series against the Giants, and Willie Mays hit a pop-up to right center field, and I was running over to catch a ball. I was looking at the ball, and I got to it, and Joe DiMaggio was playing center field, was standing under it. Of course, I didn't want to run into my idol. When I tried to stop, my foot hit a rubber drain in the outfield there, and my knee didn't give. It just went out on me.
Mickey, modern-day baseball's answer to Murder's Row.
Yeah, that's me and Roger Maris right there, and Moose Scarron, and Yogi Berra. I think probably, Paul, that's one of the best offensive teams I ever played with. A lot of people don't know it, but the year that Roger hit the 61 home runs, I had 54 that same year. Our catchers hit 60 home runs that year. Yogi had 20, and Elston Howard and Johnny Blanchard had 20 apiece. So we had a lot of home runs that year. This is in the World Series in the early 50s against the Dodgers. That's Monk Myers. The bases are loaded there. Now, I hit that ball into left center field with the bases loaded. It was a grand slam home run. In Yankee Stadium, it would have been a pop-up, really, and I would have given anything to play it in Ebbets Field my whole career. It was only 390 feet, I think, to dead center field. There's a couple of pretty good pitchers there. Whitey Ford, I think he's the greatest pitcher that I ever played for, and Warren Spahn, of course, is one of the best I ever played against.
How about this young man?
Hank Aaron, I think, was probably the most underrated baseball player in my era. People always used to compare me and Willie Mays and Sandy Koufax. And Hank was kind of stuck out in Milwaukee, where he didn't get very much publicity. But I'm glad to see him finally getting the acclaim that he deserves.
Mickey, here is a shot coming up here where you break the record, Yankee Stadium, for most home runs in a World Series.
Well, this is Sal Magley. This was Don Larson's perfect game. That was the first run we got that day. Sal Magley was pitching a great game up until this. I think this was about the fifth inning. I hit a home run off of Magley and put us ahead 1-0. Later on, we got another run in that game. We beat them 2-0, but Magley pitched a great game that day.
Well, this is one of the most famous baseball games in the history of not only baseball and World Series.
Yeah.
Made a fantastic catch here.
Yeah, this is Gil Hodges hits this ball. This is the same game, Don Larson's perfect game. This is one of the best catches I ever made here, Paul. That was in way out in left center field. That would have been a home run in Ebbets Field. For instance, that didn't even get to the track in the
stadium. Here's the home run that you break Ruth's record.
Yeah, that was in the ninth inning. It not only won that game for us, Babe Ruth did have 15 home runs. That made me 16 in World Series play.
I
called that shot, yeah. Whenever they went out and took the pitcher out and brought Schultz in, I went back over to the on-deck circle. Elston Howard was the next hitter, and I told Ellie that if he threw the first ball over, I was going to hit a home run, because usually a knuckleball pitcher will try to get the first ball over so they can really start making it work on you, and luckily I hit it.
In your last 4 years, I guess you played with a constant companion, and of course everybody realizes how hard it was for you the last couple of years. You played with pain.
Well, it was the last 4 years were very painful. I think that I had about 7 years right through the middle of my career where it didn't really bother me that much, like from 1956 until 1964. I felt like those years through there, I was playing fairly well. I could run real good. And then at the last four, it just seemed like that maybe the taping and the gauze and all that cut off the circulation somewhere or other. But I got to where I couldn't score from second base, and they had to put me on first base because I couldn't shag the flies anymore. And the pain did just really kind of get to me the last 4 years.
Now, Mickey, you wrote a book. It was called The Quality of Courage, Stories of Heroism and Bravery, and you tell about the people who you admire in the book, and as far as the quality of courage is concerned, I think Mickey Mantle exemplified that as much as any baseball player in the history of the game. We'll be back in a minute to talk a little about courage.
Good.
You know, Mick, most great athletes have one common denominator, their ability to perform under pressure. And in many cases, perform under adverse conditions. You learned that early. You had to play with pain a lot of your career.
Well, I did. I got kicked in a football game when I was a sophomore in high school, and we thought it was a sprained ankle. About 4 or 5 days later, it was still getting worse, and I went to a hospital, and they took my temperature. I had 104 degrees temperature, and we found out it was osteomyelitis of the bone. So I had to spend 2 years, my sophomore and junior year, going back and forth to the Oklahoma City Crippled Children's Hospital. And you're really right. Learning to live with pain or play with pain, just like these kids here are, is what it's all about, really.
You learned that early, which I think had to help you in your athletic career.
Well, I'm sure it did. I felt like everything was gravy after getting out of that hospital. I'm sure that most of these people will be out of here before long and really have a little fun.
Now, this is the toughest game, actually, for anyone right here. These kids are fighting the game of life itself. And as you played all during your career with a great amount of pain, I remember there was one man who really admired your display of courage, and he was quoted as saying he's probably one of the most exciting athletes I've ever had the pleasure of witnessing. And of course, I'm speaking of our late great president, Dwight D. Eisenhower. And he was a pretty good luck charm for you, wasn't he?
He really was. It seemed like every time he was at the game, I hit a home run or two. The Yankees used to open the season every year at Washington. He would throw out the first ball, and then he came to a couple of World Series games. And I think every game that he saw, I hit at least one home run. And I remember one opening day, I hit two when he was there. So he was really a good luck charm for me.
Well, you know, Mickey, after 18 years as a star for the New York Yankees, you think back, great exits, some of our, in all the history of sport, not only baseball, some great exits have been made at Yankee Stadium. Speaking of Babe Ruth, the unforgettable moment of Lou Gehrig, and of course, Joe DiMaggio. And in 1969, they had Mickey Mantle Day at the stadium. And it's, I think, a day that you and I think the fans who were lucky enough to be in attendance will never forget.
Thank you. When I walked into this stadium 18 years ago, I felt much the same way I do right now. I don't have words to describe how I felt then or how I feel now, but I'll tell you one thing. Baseball was real good to me, and playing 18 years in the Yankee Stadium for you folks is the best thing that could ever happen to a ball player. Now, to think that the Yankees are retiring my number 7 with numbers 3, 4, and 5, tops off everything that I could ever wish for. I've often wondered how a man who knew he was going to die could stand here and say that he was the luckiest man in the world. But now I think I know how Lou Gehrig felt. This is... It's been a great honor. I'll never forget it. God bless you all, and thank you very much.
Mickey Mantle, once a baseball superstar, recognized as the greatest switch hitter of all times. When he retired after the 1968 season, Mantle had 536 regular season home runs and had led his Yankee teammates to 12 American League pennants and 7 World Championships. Today, Mantle is a successful business executive in Dallas, Texas, where he lives with his wife, Marilyn, and their 4 sons, Mickey Jr., David, Billy, and Danny. Mickey Mantle. Long live the Mick, and long live his legend.